Welcome to Attachment Theory in Action, a bi-weekly podcast presented by the Knowledge Center at Chadok. Join our host, Jenna Kelly, as she dives into the world of attachment theory and trauma with field experts from across the nation.
Hey there, my Attachment Theory in Action podcast listeners and viewers. I'm your host, Jenna Kelly, and I hope this interview finds you well wherever you are listening today. I can't wait to share this next conversation with you where I get to sit down with DJ Johnson. I saw him speak at a conference a few years ago and was so moved by his presentation that I wanted to stay connected to him. I wanted to know how he was doing. I wanted to get him on this podcast so that he could share more about his story and the amazing work that he's doing. So DJ is a multifaceted educator, advocate, devoted husband and father, accomplished author, and the dynamic force behind DJ Inspires LLC. He is a parenting youth empowerment coach. He's a counselor. He's a public speaker. He deeply shares about his own narrative with navigating multiple traumas and being in the foster care system for 9 years in Indiana and all of the adversities that he's had to overcome. And now he's really using that, his own story, to help others and inspire others to be better parents, to be more trauma-informed within the school system and within the foster care system. So we talk about a lot about his own story. He shares in such a real and vulnerable way. And we talk about his ACEs score. So if you're not familiar with ACEs, Adverse Childhood Experience Study, all you have to do is look it up and you'll find a million things about that. And some of the things that made a difference along the way, some of the work and healing that he's still doing. So I can't wait for you to listen to him. And I hope you're as moved and inspired as I am. Enjoy.
Are you an educator who doesn't know where to start with trauma-informed care or attachment development in your classroom? Join us at the 2024 Trauma-Informed Relationship Focused Schools Conference on March 6th and 7th at the Knowledge Center at Chadok. Engage with keynote speakers, dynamic breakout sessions, and our night of self-care. Elevate your experience with the pre-conference workshop. Click the link in the description for tickets and more details. See you there.
Well, hello, DJ. Welcome. I am so excited to finally be sitting down with you.
Yeah, Jenna, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to be on. And I know it's been technically a couple of years in the making.
Yes, yes.
Glad we were able to make it happen.
Yeah, me too. Our paths first crossed when we were both presenting at a conference in Atlanta, and I had no idea who you were. I just kind of popped into your session. And I was so moved by your story. I felt like I needed to stay connected to you. So I immediately started following you on social media, because when you hear somebody's personal story and the vulnerability that you shared, it's like, I just had to know, like I had to continue to know, how are you doing? How are you? What are you up to? The ways that you continue to impact people. So that's the difference that you make, DJ, in case you didn't know.
And I appreciate that.
Yeah. And so I'm just really grateful to be talking today. So the first question I asked my guests is to please share an attachment memory that feels important to you and to your work and the why of your work.
Yeah, I think immediately of my mentor, Mr. Hines. And so I know we're going to get into my story, but Mr. Hines comes up in my story often, even as I speak and share with students today, as a person who was just very pivotal in my journey of becoming who I've become today, despite the things that I've went through in my life. And so I remember like interacting with him the first time. We had just got into the foster care system. And I was in kinship care. So I was living with relatives throughout my time in foster care. So I was very blessed in that sense. And in my situation, foster care became kind of like a remedy from the trauma that I experienced before coming into foster care. So usually when you hear a foster care situation, typically it's not a good one. And I wouldn't say mine was great, but it was definitely better than the situation I left. So anyway, I got into foster care, and I remember my grandma, who I was living with at the time, she told us to go to this park around the corner from the house. And at first I was kind of hesitant. And I'm like, I don't want to go. Like, I just want to stay at home. I don't watch Pokemon. I want to, you know, do the cool things. And she's like, no, I think you should go. So we ended up going. And I remember we go and they had like pool tables and foosball and ping pong and basketball court, all these. It was at a park. So it was like this really cool center that the kids would just come to after school. And I remember we go like, you know, a couple of weeks into it, I noticed this man. He would come in, go into this room, and there would be like other boys in there, and they'd be reading or doing, you know, activities, having a conversation. And so I remember he approached me one day and he was like, hey, you want to be a part of this mentoring group? And I was like, no, I want to play. Like, I don't want to do that. Y'all reading and stuff? Like, I've been at school all day. I don't want to do that. And I remember one day he brought pizza. And I was like, oh, like pizza, like, let's go. So he lured us in with pizza, but it wasn't just that. It was just, you know, at a time in my life where I was having a hard time trusting people, trusting adults, because the way that I share it is like the people who are supposed to love me the most hurt me the most. And mm-hmm. so when you're in that situation, it's hard for you to like trust anybody who comes after that, especially if they're an adult. And so for him to kind of come into my life, expose me to certain things, and just love me in a way that I just haven't experienced. This is a complete stranger before I knew him. And he ended up becoming like a father figure to me. And so my mentor is who I think of when I think of my earliest attachment memory, because if he had not came into my life when he did, I'm not really sure where I would be today.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Mr. Hines. I remember.
Oh, yes.
I remember him in your book. Which I was also so impactful. So after I saw you present, I picked up your book, The Sun is Always Shining, A Story of Adversity Turned to Triumph. And so I think Mr. Hines was one of those pivotal people, just like you shared in that memory, that was there when other people weren't, and that when, you know, somebody that you really really needed at the right time. So mm-hmm. so thank you to him. Are you still in touch with him?
Yeah. I it's been a couple of months since I talked to him, so I need to text him today. But we definitely talk. We definitely stay connected. He actually just retired. He was a city councilman in my hometown, Fort Wayne, Indiana, for many, many years. And so he just retired from that. And so he's enjoying the granddad life and loving on his grandkids and being a support to his children to support the grandkids. And I'm sure he has his hand in different projects because he's a man that I've known to not sit still. He's always doing something. But he's trying to get his golf game back together. And yeah, he's doing good.
Good. I'm so glad you guys stayed connected all this time.
Oh, yeah.
So you shared a piece of your story, and I would love for our listeners and viewers to have a better picture of your story. So to the degree that you're comfortable sharing, mm-hmm. could you give us kind of a synopsis of your journey and some of the things that you experienced in your childhood?
Yeah. So, I always started off with my parents had me when they were 16. My dad literally just turned 16 3 days before I was born. And so they were kids having a kid. And at the time, I mean, well, as a kid, I didn't know. But as I was growing up in it, you know, you didn't understand that. You just know that these people are your parents. And I didn't understand to the extent of the things that they were going through before I wrote my book. I don't know why, but when I was preparing to write my book, I really wanted to be intentional about telling their story before I told mine, because I thought it would be a great way to segue into why I ended up dealing with the struggles that I dealt with. And so as my parents had me when they were 16, my dad kind of wasn't in my life from the beginning, maybe at the beginning stages, maybe before I was one. But for the most part, I remember him not being in my life, to the point where my mom ultimately ended up marrying my stepdad. And I grew up for a good portion of my childhood thinking that my stepdad was my real dad. Until I found out on my 11th birthday, my mom walked up with this stranger and told me, this is your dad, and don't tell your stepdad. type of energy. And so I was like, whoa. So my, that's just the beginning, right? So, but in that time where my mom was with my stepdad was very abusive to her, to us. And what's crazy is, like, now that I'm on the other side as a counselor and in the mental health space, I can understand, like, looking back, like, my mom dealt with depression. My stepdad had a feel like a bipolar disorder, because I remember those very manic high moments. You know, one of my core memories with him, we don't have too many of them, but one that I kind of draw back to a lot is we took a bike ride around the city. And I remember having, you know, those moments few far in between, but there were moments. And then I also remember those very low moments where you're walking on eggshells and you're afraid to ask for food because you just have to wait until it's time to eat type of thing. And so, you know, we get hit, whooped, beat. You know, I share a story about how I got sent to school with a black eye. And it wasn't because I did anything wrong. It was because I was hungry and I took a piece of Pop-Tart from my little sister in her crib, and he found out that I did it, and he came into my room and punched me in the face. So I had to go to school the next day and lie, because he threatened me, you know, if I was to tell anybody, you know, it'd be more where this came from. And so dealing consistently with all those different things throughout my childhood, what ultimately ended up happening is you just kind of accept it. You kind of grow to think like, okay, this is just how it is in this household. And I'll try not to, you know, ruffle any feathers or get into too much trouble because I don't want it to get to a point where I'm getting hit or beat or whatever it might be. And so that kind of culminated to an event where my brother was upstairs one day. My stepdad was at work, I believe. My mom was out somewhere. So we're actually getting watched by a babysitter. And I was in the fourth grade at this time, or third grade going into the fourth grade. It was the start of the summer. And my brother is upstairs, like, playing. We don't even know. He's doing whatever. And we start smelling smoke. And so we're downstairs cooking, but we're cooking things that shouldn't be smoky. It's noodles in a boiled water and it's hot dogs. There's no reason we should be smoking. At least that should be causing any smoke. And so, you know, after a while, we not realizing what was going on. And we actually randomly had plumbers working in our bathroom. And so they come out and they run downstairs and tell everybody, hey, get out of the house. The house is on fire. Apartment is on fire. And it turns out my brother was playing with, I think, an incense or something. He was playing with something that he heard somebody come in. He put in there and it kind of lit a fire in our apartment. Our apartment burned down. And we ultimately ended up being homeless that summer. Living about a month and a half in a motel room. It was five of us. Four siblings, five of us total by my mom and then my stepdad. Also seven of us total in the motel room. And that kind of led to us ultimately getting into foster care within a couple months. My stepdad went to jail again. He was in and out of jail in my childhood. My mom didn't graduate from high school, so she didn't really have a job that can really support, you know, her five kids. And so she got what she could, and that was exotic dancing. And so in her exotic dancing journey, she ended up getting into drugs. And that was pretty much ultimately why she wasn't able to take care of us anymore. And so I remember her coming to me and having a conversation with me and just saying, hey, like, because I was the oldest. And even at that young of age, like, I always felt more mature than my age because I was always having to at least take responsibility for my siblings' actions. And then if they did anything, typically I would get in trouble for it. Or I would just have to, like, be the older brother who protected everybody as much as I could. And so she came to me and talked to me and just said, hey, I can't continue to take care of you right now. I'm going to, you know, have you go into the foster care. And then when I get myself together, I'm going to get you back. And unfortunately, she wasn't able to. And that was kind of my journey into foster care. And like I said, when I was in foster care, I was with family throughout my time, thankfully. But it wasn't without its challenges. It was dealing with the challenges of dealing with all of the trauma that I experienced and trying to manage through that, especially in a society that tells boys that they shouldn't be emotional and they shouldn't be sad and upset and all these different things. But that was often what I felt growing up. You feel abandoned. You feel like nobody wants you. I mean, my dad's not in my life. My mom's not in my life. I'm living with, you know, people that are not my parents throughout my time. So just kind of navigating those different issues from elementary to middle school and ultimately into high school. I would ultimately end up going to 4 different elementary schools, 3 middle schools, and then 3 high schools before I graduated from high school. And I ultimately ended up in California. Long story on that, but that's kind of my journey from the experiencing the trauma to kind of navigating the challenges of being in foster care and not having my parents in my life, and to ultimately becoming the person who did graduate from high school and got my college degrees and all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. That was a lot, I felt like.
Well, there's a lot to your story, and I appreciate, I guess, just the vulnerable sharing of it. And my heart breaks for the little boy in you, DJ, and all the things that you experienced. And it's also inspiring to hear the work that you're doing now and the ways that you have overcome a lot of adversity. You talk really openly about your ACEs score of a 10. And I'm assuming that that's probably even based on like the original ACEs, like the Kaiser Permanente, that didn't even take into consideration the experiences of a young boy of color and the ways that you may have also experienced racism and oppression on top of these 10 ACEs. And so I wonder when, and I know it's not just a number, and I think you're a living reminder of that too, but I just wonder what is that like to have this ACEs score of 10 and to also, you know, when you were dealing with all of this, like you said, not only just a boy who wasn't supposed to have feelings, but also as a boy of color.
Yeah, I think what saved me and hurt me at the same time was that I grew up thinking that that was normal. I grew up thinking that abuse, the trauma, my parents in and out of jail, my parents dealing with drug abuse issues. Like, I just thought like this is just kind of what happens in my family. And it wasn't just my parents, it was other members of my family that would go to jail. So it's just kind of rampant. It was just around. And so you, in my heart, as a kid, you feel like, okay, this feels wrong. Like, it feels wrong to be whipped with an extension cord to the point where you're bleeding. It feels wrong to not want to be on this earth because of the pain that you're experiencing. Like, it feels wrong to have to experience these things, but we just kind of keep pushing. We keep trucking along. And so, and I remember when I first like started learning about psychology and I started learning about the ACE score and, you know, just trauma in general. And it was kind of like a shocking moment. And that conversation didn't happen until I was 19, to like college, I feel like. And so I remember just kind of having a moment of like, whoa, like you always felt like what I dealt with, was it normal? Because I remember I would tell people and they were like, you should write a book. You have like a crazy story and the things that you overcome, like you would never know looking at the person that you are today. And I just would always be like, oh, I appreciate that. And you just kind of kept your head down, because I feel like if I ever fully acknowledge it, then I probably would have a breakdown. And so a lot of it was just me suppressing as much as I could. And that led to, you know, being suspended from school in middle school and high school because I would fight or, I have an anger issue or whatever it might be, because I try so hard to suppress and keep it down. But a lot of times it would just come out, it would blow up. So I think when I first found out about the ACE score, it was just kind of like, it was validating, because it was like, whoa, I'm not crazy having gone through all these things or having felt a certain way about going through all these things. And then I realized, like, people are right. You do have a story that is just not normal, at least being on the other side of that type of trauma, especially when I started reading some of the statistics. One of my favorite ones that I share is like, if you have an ACE score of 6 or higher, your lifespan could be shortened potentially by 20 years, which I was like, that's unbelievable. Like, that was crazy to me. But it all makes sense when I look at my mom and the trauma that she's experienced, when I look at my dad and the trauma he's experienced, even my siblings who have experienced most of the same traumas that I experienced. You can see the result of those ACE score to statistics of the impact of health and mental, whatever it might be. Like you can, I see it in my family to this day, my siblings. So I know it's real and I know the impact of it, but it also speaks to that resilience part too. Like how, yes, this is the ACE score, but how are you able to kind of bounce back from these hard things that you've experienced? So for me now, on the other side of it, it's kind of an endearing thing, because now I can have these conversations and I'm like, yeah, I was an A score of 10. And these are the things that kind of helped me navigate that challenge of dealing with all of that trauma. And now being on the other side, being able to hopefully help students through their challenges and struggles. That's kind of been the blessing of it. But at first, you just didn't know. It was kind of, it is what it is in our family, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. And so much, I'm sure you were just in survival mode.
Oh, yeah.
But let's talk a little bit more about resilience, because I think that there's sometimes this common misperception, and maybe this is kind of old school and it's gotten a little better, but especially in our American culture, of this belief that children are resilient and they just have this like innate ability to overcome things and come out through the other side. And yes, that's true. And maybe in some ways you are like the poster child of that. And I don't know if that feels like pressure or expectation. So I kind of want to circle back to that too. But, and, you know, both can be true. Children are resilient, but also we know from things like the ACEs and other research that trauma has a deep and profound impact on mental health and health. And yeah. So how do you, you know, the word resilience, and how do you kind of hold that balance of, yes, you're very accomplished and resilient, and yet these things happened to you and they had a big impact on you?
Yeah, I think it's kind of making room for both things to be true, right? You're uh-huh. resilient, but you also need help being able to bounce back from these things that you experience. And I think I will be remiss if I've started this off by mentioning my mentor. And I think of certain teachers, Mrs. Jackson, Mrs. Towns, like different teachers throughout my childhood who just kind of helped me in ways that I don't even think they realized. Uh-huh. Even in college, I remember like having moments where, being in foster care, I didn't necessarily have a family who I can like go to during college breaks. So if we were on winter break from college, typically I would be the one that would be staying in the dorms or staying wherever I was staying at and not going home for. So the college would be pretty much empty and I'm the one that's staying back, you know, and those are the things where it's like, okay, like, I remember in those moments just being like, man, I wish, I had a family who I could go to. I wish I had a family that, that could support me where I don't feel like I have to work and grind it out and try to make money, make ends meet while I'm also pursuing my educational goals. I recognize that I am a resilient person, but I also acknowledge that I wouldn't be here if I didn't have the help of others pushing me along, guiding me, giving me, advice, whatever it might be. I definitely don't take it on as like, hey, I'm resilient and, uh-huh. Do these things to your kids and they're going to be all right. Like, no, I'm like, hey, no, like, I wish I didn't have to go through those things. Cause what we don't realize often when it comes to trauma, especially, if there's a parent listening to this, and I speak to parents and just trying to help them connect better with their children. And one of the things that I always try to encourage them to understand is that we have to be purposeful and we have to be intentional with how we parent, because mm-hmm. what we don't understand is how the way we parent now is going to impact our child 10 years, 15 years from now. We have an idea, like if you yell at them too much, if you hit them, like there's all these indicators. If we harm our kid in any way, if we are constantly being judgmental toward them, if we're constantly pointing out their flaws, like we have an idea that 10 years, 15 years from now, that might negatively impact them in the future. And so being able to be intentional and purposeful is something that's so important that I try to get them to understand. And so when it comes to the conversations that I'm having now, it's like, yes, resilience is important, but we mm-hmm. cannot get to the other side. We can't get to that pinnacle or the journey that we're trying to reach without help. We can't get there. We need help. And then being able to help parents understand, like, let's be more intentional. Let's get away from, you know, continually pushing these generational cycles that's been pushed on us.
So going back to that thought of, does it ever feel like an expectation? And you kind of answered that already, but I could imagine it could feel like a lot of pressure, because now you're living out so much through your work in a more kind of public way of this accomplished individual. And so how does that land on you, DJ?
I think I've gotten much better with it. You know, when I first kind of was experiencing things, you know, I graduated from high school and I got my first I got my bachelor's degree. You know, went to college and was doing all right in college. Like, I remember like having different conversations with family members, and what they would do was like get on my siblings or like make comments to my siblings about, why can't you be like your brother? Why can't you be successful? He was able to do it. Why can't you do it? And it was just like, I understood what they were trying to do, but what it ultimately ended up doing is sort of created a rift between me and my siblings. And so I ultimately had to accept and understand, like, they're on their own journey. All I could do is be here and support them and give them advice whenever they might need it. But I'm not going to put myself in a position where I'm like, hey, do it like this. Like, no, like, I'm here if you need me. I'm going to support you in any way that I can. And so I think dealing with that situation has allowed me to really, like, not put that pressure on myself to, like, continually, like, succeed or do different things that I feel like is going to remove me further from my past. Because I remember there was a point in my life where I really tried to separate myself from my past, to the point where I had friends who didn't even know I was in foster care. I just wouldn't talk about it. I wouldn't share. But the more I started working with students and having those conversations with them, the more I realized they're still dealing with the things. And this is still 2024. Monday, February 26th, these kids are still dealing with these things that I had to deal with from my childhood. And it's unfortunate, but I can now acknowledge and recognize, like, although it sucked going through those things, I can recognize, like, I went through those things for a reason, and now I'm being able to fulfill my purpose to help others get through those challenges.
Mm-hmm. Good, good. I'm glad you've done some important work through that. So the foster care system is often not equipped to adequately address, you know, the many complexities of traumas and attachment loss and experiences of racism on top of all of this. And I know you said in some ways it was what you needed. You were not in a safe situation when you were homeless, and that you needed to go into the care of others. And so in some ways it did provide a level of change and safety. But I'm also wondering, what did it miss? If you could think of the way the foster care system could be better designed to meet your needs and the needs of children with similar stories, what do you think it needs more of?
I think they've done such a good job since I was in foster care. And we're talking now, that was 2006 when I aged out. And so since then, like, I feel like they've done a really good job of being able to support, at least I'm looking at it from the college lens, of all the different resources that are available to the students that make it to college. But I remember I didn't go to therapy until I was in my 20s. Mm-hmm. That was the first time that I talked to a therapist, counselor, or anything. And it really wasn't until my son was born where things started coming up for me. And I was like, okay, I think it's time for me to talk to a therapist. Cause it was just, you know, either triggers or just different things that was coming up. And I was like, okay, I got to address this. So for me, like, and somebody had asked me when I spoke a couple years back, like, if you can go back, like, what would you change about things that you went through? And I was like, I would go to therapy as soon as I got into foster care. Mm-hmm. So I can unpack, even as a middle schooler or elementary when I was, or even in middle, let's say I didn't do it right away, like in middle school or high school, I wish I would have been exposed to therapy in some form or fashion. So if we have these kids coming in to foster care, dealing with a traumatic situation. I remember talking to a student one time who I believe his dad had killed his mom, and then it was like a murder suicide situation. And so like this kid, you know, he's a freshman at the time. And so like he's managing and trying to navigate the world in life. So if there's these traumatic type of situations that are happening that's causing kids to go into foster care in that situation, like we got to put support in place to get these kids that mental health support. And mm-hmm. and a lot of them go into it not understanding, like, you know, a lot of the students that I meet with now are like seeing counselors or therapists for the first time in their lives. And so now we got to remove the stigma, especially we're talking in the Black and Brown communities. There's stigma towards mental health. And in our communities, we got to unpack that. We got to kind of, we can't just throw it at them. We got to be like, hey, this can support you. This can help you. We kind of have to ease them into it. So yeah, I would definitely say mental health support. Definitely got to start there. And then just listening to the kids, because I remember in my time in foster care, like I just didn't feel heard, and it was a source of my frustration throughout my middle school and high school years. And even that, I wasn't a terrible student throughout my time. Like I don't remember ever failing a class, never receiving an F. I got a couple of D's freshman year in high school, but that was it. But typically I had decent grades throughout my time in school. And you know, I remember, you know, I had some behavioral issues, but for the most part, I was a good kid. And so, like, I remember seventh grade, I was like, hey, you know, I want to be adopted. I don't want to be visited by my social worker all the time. I don't want to try to avoid her when she visits my school. Like, I don't want to have to deal with that. I want a mom. I want a dad. I want the little family of four that you see that wins those Disney trips. Like, that was the energy that I was on. And so I was trying to advocate for that, and just kind of never came to fruition. I mean, they attempted, they tried, but I always felt like anytime I voiced something, it just wasn't being heard in the way that I would like. And I know a lot of times you feel like, oh, kids don't know what's best for themselves, but it's like one thing I for sure advocated for. So I was living in the home that I thought was going to adopt me, but when I moved into the home, they revealed to me that I was too old to be adopted, and so they wouldn't adopt me. And so I was already mad at them for that situation. But it was me and my youngest sister who was living at this family's house at the time, and they actually happened to be relatives of my biological dad's side. And so we were living with them, and my brother, I think he was in a group home at the time, and doing well. Like, my brother was doing fine. He was probably doing the best he has been doing in years. And so my foster mom, auntie/auntie, she came up with this idea that she wanted to bring my brother into the home. And I guess they had an extra bed and was able to make it happen. And I said, please do not do this. He will not thrive here. This is not an environment that will help him. I need you to keep him there. Like, I'm not saying this on some, you know, jealous thing. Like, I know my brother, he's doing the best he's been doing. Please don't do this. And they did. And he didn't last. And who knows? I like to say that was the situation that really caused his life to go in such a bad direction. And so I just remember like not being heard. So if I can go back and reform my time in foster care, I would say definitely put those mental health support and services in place especially for students coming out of those traumatic situations, and then or youth, I should say, and then definitely listen, provide a safe space where children can speak up and share things with you. You might get some really insightful things from it.
Yes, those are really important lessons that the foster care system, I'm sure all the systems, school system,
oh yeah,
could really hear, speaking of listening, really hear that they could be better listening to the voices of the children in care. And the way you knew that intuitively about your brother was mm-hmm. so important. And it was, you know, it was too bad that wasn't listened to. And also, I think hearing you say how badly you wanted to be adopted, I remembered that message in your book. And I think that that's so important too, that children are all longing for this innate need to belong somewhere. And again, people weren't listening enough to that message. And yeah. It's unfortunate it didn't work out, but you knew, and you were able to vocalize that, like, this is what I want. And I remember at that point in your story, you ended up with the foster care parents that it seemed like they were good at meeting those more kind of, you know, basic needs, like mm-hmm. there was food on the table, you were going to sports, things like that. But those emotional needs were not being met.
Yeah, it's, you kind of, in, you know, when you live in different homes outside of your parents' homes, I think you kind of develop that intuition, and you really kind of develop like, okay, do these people have my best interests at heart? Mm-hmm. And there's a filling out process. And I think the way that we got exposed to this family, it was a summer going into my eighth grade year, and it felt like I was on a college like visit. Like, so if I was being recruited for mm-hmm. like college, like I was, you know, they were the best meals. We went swimming, I think, that whole weekend. Like, it was just such a good time, right? And so I remember going back to my grandma and was just saying how excited, you know, me and my sister were to be able to stay in that home. And so we went in like excited with good intentions. And then over time, you just kind of realize like, okay, this wasn't what I thought it was going to be. And I guess the biggest issue that I dealt with in that particular home was that obviously she had her kids who she, you know, birth. Mm-hmm. And they definitely got preferential treatment over us as the foster kids in the home. I think I even remember her actually verbalizing that out loud. And so when I realized that, I'm like, hey, I get it. Those are your kids. But also, like, you brought us into this home. Like, it wasn't the other way around. And so I realized, like, okay, all right, I got to put my antennas up. I got to protect myself a little more. And what was interesting, there was another foster, my foster brother, and he was older than me, like a couple years older. And he kind of would like warn me without warning me, kind of wanted me to see for myself. But like, we would always have those different conversations, and was kind of, I just had my antennas up and just really tried to protect myself in that moment. And I think that particular home really hardened me to a point where I just really got into like this kind of selfish mindset where I'm like, I gotta take care of myself, because mm-hmm. I try to put it in the hands of other people. I try to, you know, acknowledge it through my social worker, but clearly I just gotta take care of myself. And so from that home, when I realized that they weren't gonna adopt me, I ended up having another auntie who was, you know, wanting to go through the process of adopting me. And so I was like, I'm moving with her. Like, let's mm-hmm. make this happen. I'm moving out of here. Right. And then me and her got into it just because things weren't happening the way that I was promised or told. And like you say, I just kept like, no, I just had this thing about me where I'm like, I got to protect myself because nobody's going to do it. Yeah, well, my mentor, like, there was people, but in terms of the people that I had to live with, you know, it was just one of those things where I was like, I gotta look out for myself.
Yes, a very wise adaptation. Your spidey senses were very well adapted or developed.
Thankfully.
Because you had to be in survival mode for so long. And so yeah. I'm sure there are times where that's really served you well, because it's had to protect you when others weren't able. So let's talk more about you now. And now you talked about therapy, although I do want to segue back just for a moment, because I think that was another really important lesson that our systems could be better integrating in terms of being more trauma-informed. It's like, how could you have been through all of that, all of those disruptions, and not anybody say, you know, I think this young boy could really use some therapy. And I, you know, we still see that sometimes. I hope it's gotten better. I think they do that too much with young children as well. Again, there's that belief like, oh, they're so young, they won't remember. And that's mm-hmm. when their brains are developing the most and when it's really imprinted. So I want to just, you know, reinforce that important message of your mental health needs needing to be better addressed during that time. But now here you are, and you're doing one of the most important jobs that there is, which is you're now a father. And so I, no surprise when you said, and then that also brought up the need to get into therapy. So just wondering if you could talk more about your experience as a father and what that's brought up and the work you've had to do.
Yeah, when my son was born, or even before, like I established that I didn't want to hit my child. I in the beginning, unless I absolutely had to. And then the other thing I established that I was going to be present. I was pretty much going to be the thing that my dad wasn't for me. And in theory, that seemed like some pretty good goals as a father. And so as I got into the fatherhood journey, and I'm grateful for my wife because she kind of helped me reveal some of this as well. It's like, I kind of got into a mode where it's like, oh, I got to support and I got to make sure that our family is taken care of financially. And, you know, mom will take care of, you know, all the other things that need to be taken care of. And I was being present and I was there, but I wasn't present. And I wasn't really the dad that my son needed me to be. I was trying to be the dad that my dad wasn't for me. And so I ultimately had to look at the kid in front of me and it just acknowledge and recognize what he needed from me. And then what my wife, who we're partnering in this parenting journey together, what she needed from me. And I realized like there were some things that I had to unpack. One, fatherhood wound and mother wound as well. Like there's some things that I had to kind of work through to be able to be the dad that I am for my son now, who can, you know, be more patient, be more understanding, allow him to have a voice and speak up on certain things, allow him, you know, to kind of grow and not just be on him all the time. Don't do this, don't do that, don't do this, right? I don't think I would have been able to truly embrace, you know, the father that I am today, had I not like allowed myself to really work through some of the different traumas that I experienced. And, you know, to your point, like a lot of times, you know, you wonder like, how is a kid who's going through that much trauma not like red flagged anybody or not like got anybody to say, hey, put this kid to therapy stat, right? Mm-hmm. And I think there's two answers or there's two like views of it. Like, so you experience the trauma and then there are the kids who show you that they've been traumatized and there are the kids that kind of go under the radar. And I was kind of the kid that went under the radar. There was some signs, but for the most part, like I went under the radar. I was a good student. I pretty much stayed out of trouble. You know, I compared to my siblings who were in trouble a lot. Like there was a lot of different things that kind of was there that kept me under the radar, which we weren't able to see it. So I think going back now, I'm like with my son, just really trying not to roll these generational cycles alone. Like it stops with me. Like one, yes, I'm going to be present, but I'm going to be intentional and I'm going to be there for all these milestones and I'm going to help him with different lessons and we're going to have different conversations and I'm going to love him in ways that I wasn't allowed to be loved or I wasn't loved by my parents. So I'm hugging him all the time. I'm, you know, touching him, quality time together. Usually trying to say yes to the moments that he wants to play and do different things. He still invited me as of recently to his field trips. I asked him, like, hey, you want me to volunteer for your field trip? And he's like, yeah. And I heard that that's going to go away soon. So I know that people that are listening are laughing at me right now. And so all these things, I'm like, I just wasn't, I don't think I would have been able to really see the true beauty of being a father if I didn't really heal myself. Cause I know there would have been things that would have kept coming up. Like one thing, a big thing that came up was my son, you know, wouldn't finish his food or he wouldn't, he would be like super picky with his food. And, you know, I remember growing up, like I wasn't allowed to be picky. I remember having to sit at the table and be there all night if I didn't finish food. And so that was really hard for me when he was dealing with it. And there was a moment where I had to like get in that healing journey. I'm like, okay, DJ, why is this bothering you so much? I just had to ask myself, like, why is this bothering you so much? And then I had to go back. Oh yeah, I wasn't allowed to pick what I wanted to eat. I wasn't, and it wasn't until I went to foster care. I remember my grandma, the first time she told me I didn't have to eat something. I was like, what? I get a choice, you know? But it's like things that seem so small, but like, that's kind of, you know, what I was dealing with in my childhood. And so to process that, move past that. Now I'm able to really be for this child that's in front of me. Turns out my son has a sensory sensitivity to foods and different things. And so we had to go to OT. We had to do all these things to get him to the point where he's at now with his eating. So it's all those things where I'm like, okay, I should have went in therapy before, but I'm grateful that I ultimately got into it, because now I'm continuing to become the person that I'm called to be and destined to be.
Yeah. What a beautiful story of, as you talk about fatherhood, and I can hear the love for your son. And I think it's a good reminder that good intentions are a great place to start, because most parents will say that they want to do things differently or better, but to actually be able to give what you often didn't receive is still a different story. And so the work that you have to do in order to be able to do that, like you said, the healing, the therapy. And even I heard you ask yourself, like, why is this bothering me so much? That ability to be reflective is such an important parenting skill that you were able to make it more about your son in that moment and wonder what was coming up for you. And you're seeing him and hearing him in a way that wasn't provided to you, which is no easy.
Oh, so hard.
So, yeah. So you have, you know, my complete kudos for all that you are doing in your fatherhood journey in it. And I'm sure it's a lifelong process, right? All of the healing and things that can come up often are.
The best thing that I've heard is that, because I always felt like, or at least growing up, you kind of felt like healing, you reach a point of healing, like there's something that you can grab onto at the end of it. And somebody helped me and was like, no, healing is not linear. It's like, it's a continual journey of healing and growing and becoming a better version of yourself. And that has released me from all these expectations that I put on myself to heal. Cause I just acknowledge and recognize, like, I'm not perfect. I'm still searching and growing and trying to be the best version of myself, despite the things that I've accomplished in my life. And, you know, some days I'll get 60% and that's the best that I gave you that day. And that was the best that I can give you. And some days I can go 100%, but those days are few far in between now, but I just give myself that grace and know, like, okay, we're going to get through this. It's okay.
Yeah. So another important job that you have, which I want you to share more about all the amazing work that you're doing and speaking and author and the ways you work with youth. But I'm also wondering what that has uncovered about the work and the healing that you need to do. As someone, when I was providing therapy I was fresh out of grad school and was like, I want to work with teenage girls because I have a few of my own ACEs, and I was a pretty wild and rebellious teen. And I was like, who better to understand these teenage girls than me? And that was also a double-edged sword, because it revealed, like, whoa, there's a lot that I haven't worked on in my own story. And now I've got these girls sitting across from me in this intimate therapeutic relationship sharing their story with me. And it made me realize all the things that I still needed to process. So I, you know, did myself also got into therapy, and I think good supervision is also really important. But just wondering, you know, what your work has uncovered and how you do that, because you do work with so many youth who have trauma and similar stories.
Yeah, I think in the beginning, it revealed to me that I could not hide my story any longer. My first kind of coming out party, I guess, of sharing my story and being more vulnerable and open was in 2014. I got a position to work mentor foster and probation youth. And this was actually after a time where I was trying really hard to work like in a collegiate athletics, because my bachelor's degree was in movement and sports science. And then I believe I was pursuing my master's in sport management coaching. And so I always saw myself as an athletic director in high school and in the beginning of college. And so I was applying, 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 and just was not, anything was happening. And I remember like praying about it and doing a fast. And I, what was revealed to me out of that was you need to open up your search. And when I opened up my search, one of the first jobs that I found was this position for professional youth mentor for foster and probation youth. I was like, well, I'm a former foster youth and I'm familiar with the probation, you know, scenes. So I was like, I could do this. And crazy enough, I ended up getting that job the day before my wedding. I had an interview the day before my wedding and they offered it to me. And, you know, I went into my wedding and a honeymoon in a good mood because I knew I had a job waiting on me when I came back. And so when I got into that, you know, I started working with the students and I started connecting with them. I started hearing their stories and hearing the different conversations that they would share with me. And I realized like, oh, snaps, like I've been gatekeeping my story for a really long time, where to the point where I had best friends or friends who that just didn't know, like, you know, all every little detail of my story. And so the more I started working with students, the more I realized that I had to like keep working with them, because like you said, like who's gonna, there's not many people who can get through the fire and can understand students at the level that, you know, maybe we are able to. And the more, like I said, the more I start working with them, the more I realize, like, okay, I gotta keep doing with this work. I gotta keep fighting. Even in those moments where I wanted to go back to college, and there was a time, you know, between that point in 2014 to 2018, I ended up working at Fox as a researcher for a sports show. And so like, I had these like dream sports jobs or sports opportunities, but I just kept getting pulled back to this work of helping students, of helping parents and families, and really encouraging them to break past their generational curses that they're dealing with. And so I would like to tell you that even in these conversations that we're going on the other side of the healing and the curses and all that, but unfortunately that is not the case. And so until we start to see a break in that, I realize like my job is not done with students. Like I gotta keep working, I gotta keep helping them, I gotta keep helping them push past their challenges and their struggles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really walking in your purpose.
Yeah, for sure.
So tell us more about your work and where our listeners can learn more about what you're doing.
Yeah. So I'm located in Southern California, and I get the pleasure, I have a business, DJ Inspires LLC. And I have the pleasure and privilege to contract with a district and, you know, many other districts as well. But in this district in particular, where myself and some of my colleagues, we go into the schools and we do individual group counseling. We also do parenting workshops. We support teachers as well in anything that they might need. A lot of them are dealing with their struggles with families or whatever, and trying to teach and trying to be a support to the students. We just, you know, educational consulting. And then I had the opportunity as well to speak across the country, either at conferences where I met you, or different high schools, middle schools, colleges as well. I'm actually speaking at a college this Thursday or coming up this week. So I have the opportunity now to really just be fully entrenched in my purpose. And like I said, I didn't originally want to do this work. I didn't know that this is the work that or path that I was going to go down. I really was a sports guy. It's still in the back of my heart and mind to do sports. But I acknowledge and recognize like, okay, there's a duty for me to help others, help students in particular. And so to be able to do that work and fulfill it and be able to make a living off of it, it's just one of those things where I'm grateful. I'm very grateful. And it ultimately makes all the things that I went through in my life worth it, ultimately.
Awesome. Well, we will be sure to link your website and your book and all of that in our show notes, because you make an impact, like I told you when I first saw you speak a few years ago. So I want your message to keep getting out there. So to end us, unfortunately, we're at that time. What do you envision for the future for children who have experienced traumas and who may be in the foster care system? What do you envision the future to look like?
I feel like there will be more parents that will adopt an authoritative parenting style, which is basically like a balance of expectations and nurturance. And really, I guess the term they're calling it is gentle parenting these days. Cause I feel like I'm really the type of person that feels like every issue that we have in our world, it feels like it spawns from the way a person was parented. And so we're having these issues of struggle and strife or anger and frustration, whatever, or trauma, there's all these different factors, of course, but really typically, usually it comes down to how we were raised. And so if we can get to a place where more of us are raising our children with more intention and more purpose, I'm crazy enough to believe that that's going to change the world. And, you know, I think the way we've been raised is, I gotta prepare them for this world that's hard and rough and tough. And so people believe to be able to do that, you gotta be rough and tough and hard to your children. And I'm on the other side. I'm like, because you are going to be dealing with the rough and tough world, I want to build you up at home so that when you go out there, I'm going to build you up so much that the world can't beat you up in the way that we believe that it will. And so far, you know, it's working. My son is about to be 7. You know, he's doing all right. He's doing well in school. He plays well with others, has a lot of friends that he always talks about. So we're on the right track. But that's my biggest hope for the future is being able to have more people be more intentional about the way they parent. I used to always joke when I started working with parents, I'm like, do you know that we have goals in just about every aspect of our life except for parenting? We have goals in jobs, we have goals in our career, in our family, in our relationships, but I rarely do I hear a person say, I want to be a better parent than I was last year. And it just shows like how unintentional we've been with being the best parent that we can be to our children.
Well, that just gave me goosebumps.
There were so many things I feel like I could have said, but parenting has just been on my mind a lot over the last several years. So that's where my heart is at the moment.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, thank you, DJ, for sharing yourself in this conversation in such an authentic and vulnerable way. You can see that you're so aligned with your purpose. And like I said, it's making a difference. And so I continue to be in awe and gratitude of all that you've been through and the amazing work that you're doing. And I look forward to continuing to follow you to see how you're doing. And hopefully our paths will cross again. Maybe we'll bump into each other at a conference.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to that. Or maybe I'm, you know, speaking in your area. In my 2024 Be Inspired tour right now. And so speaking at high schools, middle schools, colleges, sharing my story of, you know, overcoming adversity and triumph. But more importantly, not just sharing a story, but like giving tangible things that students can work on to be the best versions of themselves, despite the things that they're going through. So I'm super excited. Like I said, the tour is continuing. I'm in conversations to ultimately, hopefully go to Toronto, Canada next month. So it's exciting. It's exciting. So reach out.
Yeah, very exciting and needed. So we'll make sure, I'm sure that's on your website, but we can also link the tour link specifically so people can see if you're going to be in their area.
Oh, that's a good idea. I usually post it on my social media, but I didn't think to put it on my website. Thank you for giving me that idea.
Yeah, just, you know, a little marketing advice.
Thank you. Told you I'm not the best at marketing myself.
Yeah, none of us are. But anyway, well, so good to be here with you in conversation. Thank you so much, DJ, and take good care.
Awesome. You too. I appreciate this time with you today.
You too. Thank you.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please leave us a review and share with your friends and coworkers. You can also connect and chat with other listeners through our Facebook group. On behalf of all of us here at the Knowledge Center, thanks for tuning in.